वाचस्पति का खोजेशु महामराखतेषु च रत्न प्रदीप आभान्ति ललन रत्न संयुता स्वच्छ स्फटिक कुर्येषु महामराखतेषु च रत्न प्रदीप आभान्ति ललन रत्न संयुता. The walls of the house were made of first-class marble, decorated with valuable jewels. There was no need of light, for the household was illuminated by the rays of these jewels. The female members of the household were all amply decorated with jewelry. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It is understood from this statement that the opulences of household life were exhibited in valuable jewels, ivory, first-class marble, and furniture made of gold and jewels. The clothes are also mentioned as being decorated with golden filigree. Everything actually had some value. It was not like the furniture of the present day, which is cast in valueless plastic or base metal. The way of Vedic civilization is that whatever was used in household affairs had to be valuable. In case of need, such items of value can be exchanged immediately. Thus, one's broken and unwanted furniture and paraphernalia would never be without value. This system is still followed by Indians in household affairs. They keep metal utensils and golden ornaments or silver plates and valuable silk garments with gold embroidery. And in case of need, they can have some money in exchange immediately. There are exchangers or money lenders and for the householders. Om Agyanti Midandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jinatasmoy Sri Guruve Namaha. Walls were made of first-class marble, decorated with valuable jewels. There was no need of light, for the household was illuminated by the rays of these jewels. The female members of the household were all amply decorated with jewelry. Within today's sloka, there is a description being given of the most wonderful celestial mansion that was created by the mystic power of Kardama Muni for the pleasure and comforts of his wife Devahuti. It has been explained that Devahuti was the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, who was the leader of all humanity, like a king. And he lived with such royalty and opulences, but he was a great devotee of the Lord. And everything he had, he utilized in the loving service of the Lord. And when it came time to marry his daughter, he understood that the purpose of this human life is only for self-realization. It is never meant for sense gratification. And that a proper husband, a proper father, a proper guru, a proper teacher is one who teaches by example and by words the way of self-realization for one's dependents. Guru na sasyat, swajini na sasyat, pita na sasyat, jnani na sasyat. So, of all the great kings and princes, even demigods, who would have loved to have married Devahuti, he had to make a choice. It is explained that this Devahuti was so pious, she was so pure in heart, so gentle, and so beautiful. She was so chaste and so humble. It is explained that even when the demigods of the higher planets would see the beauty of Devahuti from their flower airplanes, they would faint and fall to the ground. So certainly, Swayambhuva Manu could have selected anyone he so desired to be the husband of his daughter. But of everyone he chose Kardama Muni, who was a great rishi. He had no money. He had no home. He was living in the forest, performing severe tapasya. He would be fasting, always meditating on the Supreme Lord's lotus feet. It is explained that he performed such tapasya in devotional service to Lord Vishnu, that Vishnu, seeing his devotee enduring so much hardship for his sake, he began to cry tears. And the tears of Vishnu filled a lake where Kardama Muni was residing in the forest. And that became known as Bindu Sarovar. So by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, Devahuti was married to Kardama Muni. And Swayambhuva Manu, the emperor of all humanity, gave his blessings to his daughter to assist her husband in every way possible. And assisting her husband meant living in the forest, wearing practically nothing but the barks of trees, and doing tapasya. And sometimes her husband would not eat or drink anything for days and weeks because he was so absorbed in his samadhi. And Devahuti, being a chaste and faithful wife, she would never take any food or drink until after her husband. So soon, her beautiful, beautiful body, which was full of light and full of such inconceivable opulences, it became very thin, emaciated. Her wonderful silken hair became matted. Her beautiful eyes lost their luster, because she was willing to sacrifice anything, because she considered her husband to be the representative in her life of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. But it was her natural inclination as a young lady that she wanted a child. And Kardama Muni, seeing so many years she endured so many hardships living in the jungles for him, that he decided that I should bestow upon her a beautiful son. But the condition of living in the forest was so pious and so austere that the particular function that is required to have a son simply was not possible under those circumstances. So by his tremendous powers, what he did is he created a fantastic mansion. In this mansion, there was no wood or plastic or cement or plaster. It was all made of gold and silver and beautiful, beautiful jewels, diamonds and rubies and emeralds, lapis lazuli. Everything was only this. And there was wonderful parks with all auspicious flower-bearing and fruit-bearing trees, and only auspicious birds like swans and peacocks and parrots. And he also created, by his mystic power, thousands and thousands of beautiful maidservants and attendants who were all wearing the most luxurious silken garments and wonderful jewelries, and who all had such young and beautiful features, and they were all completely obedient to lovingly execute any order asked of them. It was like a heavenly planet. But there was something unique about this heavenly abode. It was like an airplane. It flew. No one can do like this today. Just like we are at this beautiful temple. And if we want to go somewhere, sometimes we don't want to leave the temple. Wouldn't it be nice if we wanted to go to Delhi and we can just take all the gardens and all the devotees and the whole temple and everything and just within seconds arrive in Delhi? So-called modern technology, they have created airplanes. And the best airplanes, these Boeing 727s, they're big. They're not made of gold or silver or jewels. They're made out of base metals. And as you're flying in these airplanes, you don't hear the sweet chirping of peacocks and parrots and swans, and you don't hear celestial maidens singing Vedic hymns. You just hear the terrible, obnoxious roar of engines. And you are not surrounded by beautiful lakes and flowers and wonderful, wonderful, spacious facilities, but you're crammed into a little seat. And all around you are people just waiting to get out. And then there's all sorts of warnings. That if this plane falls in the water, there's a life raft under your seat. In the middle of the ocean, you'll be floating around in a life raft. And there's a whistle that you can call the sharks to come and eat you. Who's going to hear you in the middle of the ocean? And also, in case there's turbulences and you become nauseous and sick to your stomach, there's a bag that you can vomit in. And also, in case somehow or other the plane catches on fire and you have to get out, there's an exit ramp, and this is where the exit ramps are. You just break the window and jump out onto the ramp. And in case this airplane loses all oxygen and you're suffocating to death, then oxygen masks will fall. And put it on yourself first before your children. And hopefully you'll survive long enough to save your child. And also, in case we crash, there's a seatbelt that you should fasten right now. And for your convenience, if you need anyone to come and help you, you just press this button. Like this. They're telling you before you start that this is a demoniac situation in which you may suffer or die. Which is actually good, because when a devotee hears these things, he's not concerned with seatbelts or life rafts or vomit bags or exit ramps. He just begins to chant very attentively the holy names of Krishna. But even if it's a good flight, when you come out after so many hours, you have jet lag, you just want to go to sleep, your ears are clogged from all the noise, you're drained of all energy, like this. But Kardama Muni, and plus, you have to pay so much just to suffer like this, because you want to get to one place to another. But Sri Kardama Muniji, because of his great mystic perfections and his devotion to God, such an airplane he created. And it went so fast that it could go from one planet to another in a matter of minutes. And yet, it never appeared to even be moving because everything was so comfortably situated. And he didn't need a pilot. Just wherever he desired, he would just chant a mantra and then he would just enjoy with his wife and it would go to one heavenly planet to another. So in this atmosphere, because Devahuti was such a great devotee of the Lord, and Kardama Muni was also such a surrendered soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead incarnated from their divine relationship. And he appeared as Lord Kapila Dev. Now, after Kardama Muniji created such wonderful, wonderful facilities for comforts, after the son was born, he felt that now I have done my work. Now my wife, she will be protected by son. And after Kapila Dev grew up a little, Kardama Muni left back into the jungles, into the forest, to simply fix his mind in the loving service of Sri Krishna. And as far as Devahuti, she raised her child with great love and affection. And Kapila Dev, when he became slightly older, he began to preach to his mother transcendental knowledge. And it is explained that Lord Kapila Dev was the incarnation of the supreme opulence of knowledge. As Parasara Muni has said, Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashashashriya jnana vairagya yoschaiva sanam bhaga itingana. That Bhagavan, Supreme Personality of Godhead, possesses six opulences in full. He has all beauty, all knowledge, all strength, all wealth, all fame, and all renunciation. And the Lord in his original form of Sri Krishna, possesses all of these six opulences to its supremest degree. But in his various incarnations into this world, he manifests particular opulences to such excellent degree according to the purpose of that particular incarnation. Just like Nara Narayan Rishi exhibited the supreme opulence of renunciation. Such tapasya he did, no one ever could or will be able to duplicate as he was living in Badrik Ashram. And Lord Vamanadeva also exhibited renunciation as well as the opulence of beauty. And Lord Parasaram and Lord Nrisimhadev, the opulence of strength. Sri Ramchandra exhibited especially his opulence of divine beauty and fame. And such incarnations as Prithu Maharaj reveal the divine opulences of great wealth and administrative power. Kapila Dev revealed to the world the opulence of the Lord's supreme knowledge. And he spoke this Sankhya philosophy. And the culmination of all of his incredible explanations was pure devotional service. Lord Kapiladeva explains systematically all of the elements of material nature, how they were created, how they are interrelating with one another, what each one's particular function is. The 24 material elements are explained in full. The nature of the mind, the nature of the intelligence, the nature of the ego. There is no other explanation of material creation that is so precise, conclusive, and accurate as that of Lord Kapiladeva. The scientists today, they are speculating in so many ways, trying to discover how this material existence is operating. But if they want to truly understand, all they have to do is read the teachings of Lord Kapiladeva. He is speaking as the authority because he is the actual creator of this material creation. If you want to understand a particular product, you have to understand from the person who has created it. Just like if you buy a Maruti automobile, you do not go to get an instruction manual from the Hindustani Motor Company. The manufacturers of Maruti know how the Maruti runs, what its function is, and what they have utilized. So similarly, if we want to understand the nature of this material existence, we can only understand it properly from God, who has created it. And he has given in the scriptures his instruction manual. And Vedavyas has recorded the words that Lord Kapiladeva spoke to his beloved mother. And as I has explained, the culmination of everything that he has explained is that we must associate with devotees of the Lord. We must hear the glories of the Lord, chant the names of the Lord, and develop pure unalloyed devotion. Because that is the purpose of this entire creation, to bring independent, rebellious souls again back to their sane consciousness of becoming the loving, surrendered servants of Lord Sri Krishna. He explicitly describes the process of devotional service and how it is to be executed. And after he tells his beloved mother, Devahuti, now I have given you all knowledge. I have done my service as a son. Now I will go. Now I will live the life of renunciation. Some people, they have forgotten the essence of the principle of life, which is revealed in the Vedas. The duty of the son, who is putra, is to deliver the parents from hellish conditions. The duty of the son is not simply, like is popular belief today, to maintain the parents' body until they die. That may be a social duty in many cases. But the real purpose of a son is to deliver the parents from the repetition of birth and death. It's confirmed by Pujari. So Kapila Dev, after giving his mother the understanding of the goal of life, he said, now, my dear mother, with your blessings and permission, I will leave. You will not see me again. And Devahuti, although she loved him more than she loved her own life, she naturally gave her permission and blessings because she knew it was his mission to leave. And after Kapila Dev left, Devahuti began to follow his instructions. She utilized every moment of her day in the process of bhakti, always thinking of Krishna, worshipping his form as a deity, hearing his glories, associating with his devotees, chanting his names. And it is described here, the beautiful, beautiful household atmosphere that Devahuti was living in. Today's verse explains that the walls of the house were made of first-class marble, decorated with valuable jewels. There was no need of light, for the household was illuminated by the rays of these jewels. The female members of the household were all amply decorated with jewelry. But yet, for Devahuti, she did not see any enjoyment in any of her circumstances. Because, from one point of view, her real attachments in this world were naturally for her husband, Kardama Muni, and her son, Kapila Dev. And they had both left her alone. So although she was enraptured in intense separation from her son, especially, who was so beautiful, who was such an object to put all your affection and love in, can you imagine having the Supreme Personality of Godhead as your own child, and then he leaves you? This happens just as Ram left Kaushalya to live in the forest for so many long years. And Krishna, he left Yashoda to live in Mathura and Dwarka. In a similar way, Kapila Dev, he left his mother. But in leaving within her heart, he was more intensely present and reciprocating with her affection. So completely immersed in thinking of the Supreme Lord in the form of her own son, she lost all attraction for even the most heavenly opulences that can be imagined. It is explained here that although there was the most wonderful foods, the most wonderful everything, she she didn't even care to put on her luxurious clothes or jewelry. She just started wearing old clothes. And she was bathing three times a day and performing so much tapasya that soon her hair started turning gray. She didn't care anything anymore for her own beauty or all the beauty around her. Why? Param drisva nivartate. Because she was experiencing the beauty of Krishna. And all these so-called beautiful things of this world, they turn pale and unattracted in the presence of the beauty of Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami has prayed. In his prayer, he has warned us that if you want to remain attached to your wealth, to your prestige, to your society, to your home and all of these other things, then please do not go to the bank of Jamuna where Krishna is standing, playing upon his flute, standing in his most wonderful threefold bending form. Because once you see that divine form, you will have no more attraction for any of these things of the world. Because Krishna is the source of all beauty. As our Guru Maharaj used to say, if you have 1 lakh of rupees, you are not in need of 1 paisa or 2 paisa or 1 rupee or 2 rupees. If you have 1 lakh of rupees, you're not in need of anything. Similarly, when we have Krishna, who is full of all pleasure, who is full of all opulences, then what is our need? What is the requirement for the objects of affection in this material world? Of course, a devotee who develops affection for Krishna becomes the most affectionate person toward all living beings, but not in the basis of an illusion, not on a basis of selfish attachment, but he becomes affectionate on the basis of truth. The affection is for the spiritual source within everything, the substance of existence. And his affection is no longer based on a selfish desire to exploit, but it is based on the selfless desire to serve. So this was Devahuti's divine realization by following the path of bhakti. People of this world are striving so much to get some jewelry, to get some nice clothes, nice food, to get a nice house and decorate it. Devahuti had all these things, and to her it all just looked like a desert. Why? Because when you see the sun, all the little candles around do not have much significance. In the pitch dark of night, sometimes fireflies make nice displays of light. They think that they are very powerful, how they are lighting their little directions around them. But when the sun rises, the firefly is insignificant. In the same way, all the manifestations of beautiful charm in this world are insignificant in the face of Krishna, who is the source of all charm, of all sweetness, and of all beauty. And who is the natural recipient of all affection and all love. So Devahuti, she lived in constant remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even while living under such wonderful, wonderful, wonderful conditions of life, she didn't leave it. She used it for Krishna's service. It was meant for that purpose only, to be utilized in Krishna's service, not for her own enjoyment. And this is actually the perfection of our life. to see everything of this world as a facility to be used in Krishna's service, to see nothing for our own selfish, exploitative desires. And that is the divine consciousness of a bhakta. The karmakandis who follow the path of performance of yajna and worship of devatas, they feel that the goal of life is to enjoy to maximum degree. And of course, we should be pious, we shouldn't hurt anyone, and by living in this way and working hard and doing proper yajna, we can get beautiful home, beautiful family, nice health, and in the future we can be elevated to the heavenly abodes where we can live for millions and millions of years with no problems, no suffering. In the heavenly planets, there's no earthquakes, there's no bubonic plagues, there's no other countries pointing nuclear bombs at you. There's no communal riots. There's no old age and disease. There's no mosquitoes and snakes. There's no bosses and employers who demand so much of you. There's no insubmissive wives. There's no chauvinistic husbands. Everything's very nice there. You could live very peacefully for millions and millions of years in great luxury. And for those who are on the path of the yogic principles, they want to achieve great, great mystic powers. The various siddhis by which you can read people's minds, control people, create planets, take anything from anywhere, become smaller than the smallest, bigger than, heavier than the heaviest. Through the process of jnanakanda, by discriminating very carefully, neti, 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 what is matter, what is spirit, and ultimately coming to the conclusion, aham brahmasmi, that I am spirit, I am not any of these material elements. Through these various processes of the yogic paths revealed in the Vedas, we are either enjoying or renouncing, but we never really understand a thing's real value. The karmakandis, they are worshipping God because they want more and more enjoyment for themselves. And the vairagis, they want to give it all up. They want nothing to do with it. But a devotee, a bhakta, sees how everything has been created by God for the service of God. Therefore, Devahuti, she utilized all these facilities in Krishna's service, not at all for her own enjoyment. And this is the perfection of life. Because to the degree we want to enjoy something, we become attached and we become bound by that attachment. And that bondage is the cause of all suffering. But when we become attached to Krishna, then we learn the art of real living. Then we use everything for Krishna. It's like this beautiful temple. It is for Krishna's pleasure. We come here because by coming, when Krishna sees that we are hearing Srimad Bhagavatam attentively, he becomes very pleased. when he sees that we are joyfully dancing in kirtan and chanting the holy names, he becomes very pleased. When he sees that we are working hard to make arrangements to invite and make this place attractive for other conditioned souls to come and learn the process of bhakti, he is pleased. So everything here is meant simply for the pleasure of Krishna. When he sees devotees cooperating, respecting one another, he is pleased. So this is our goal and this is our perfection of life, simply to please Krishna. Also in this verse, Srila Prabhupada has written in the purport how the westernized conception of civilization is both spiritually and materially without substance. It's void. In the sense that the real culture of humanity, which actually to this very day is most preserved in this great land of Bharatvarsha, India, everything has a meaning and a value, materially and spiritually. Spiritually, as we explained, whatever we do, whatever we say, whatever we have, should be seen for the pleasure of God. And if you're actually making your arrangements for the pleasure of God, then you want to offer God the best. Not the worst. You want to give him that which is the most pure, the most valuable, the most precious. Some people think that when I'm young, I should simply study. And when I graduate from my university, then I should simply work hard and develop a occupation and a family. And when I get in my middle ages, I should start making all sorts of last preparations, working harder than ever, so I could turn everything over to my children. We have seen. And in this way, people think, religion, I don't have time now. It's for another time. The students, they say, after I complete my study, then I will take seriously this Krishna consciousness. I don't have time. And then when they finish their study, they realize they have to make it in the world. They have to survive. So they start working and working and working. After I make it, after I establish myself, then I will take to Krishna consciousness. And after they're established, they realize that now they have a wife, and they have children, or they have a husband and they have children, and there's so many competitors trying to destroy whatever they've already established. So now they have to somehow or other get promotions and increase their prestige. Because after all, the society and family members around them, I have to give the respect to our caste, so I have to work even harder. And then when they start getting old, their hair starts turning gray, they start having to wear eyeglasses, and their limbs just don't function properly anymore, then they realize, my children, they're grown up now, and now I have to work even harder than ever, because I have to make all the last arrangements to give everything to my children in a wonderful way. And by the time they're finished with that, they're usually about 60 or 70 years old, and they're conditioned, and they have all bad habits, and their consciousness is all flickering to all material things throughout their lives. And then they think, well, now I will give the fag end, most useless part of my life to Krishna. You're supposed to give the best you have to Krishna. But this whole philosophy of wait till you retire, then become God conscious, this is the mentality of I'll give the worst part of my life to Krishna and I'll keep the best part for my own sense gratification and the sense gratification of others. Bhagavatamiha durlabham manusam janma tad apyatruvamartha. This is the time to become Krishna conscious, to become very serious. It cannot wait for anything. We have our responsibilities. We may be brahmacharis, sannyasis, grihastas, vanaprastas, it doesn't matter. We may have occupation, we may have studies, but the first priority of our life must be our offering of consciousness to God by chanting His name, by hearing His glories, by learning how to live. We should give the best we have to Krishna, the best of our life. And when we start arranging a home for ourselves, we should understand that this home is a temple of God. Because in this home I'm going to be worshiping God and I'm going to be raising my family in the service of God. And all food will be prasad to be offered to God. So what's in the home should be the best for Krishna. It could be simple, but it should have value. And Srila Prabhupada is explaining here that even, and we have seen, sometimes we do Harinam Sankirtan chanting and we go into very, very poor areas. Very, very poor. People who have houses, just one tiny little room. And sometimes it's almost like a shack with tin cans flattened out on top. And you look inside, and there's all sorts of brass and silver utensils in this little tiny place. Have you seen? You have seen? We see all the time. If you do Harinam with us to these places, you will see. Huh? Tattva has seen, even in these little shacks with tin cans all around them, they have colored TVs. But that's not what we're talking about here. It's the opposite. The idea is when they get some money, however they somehow get it, they get some brass or some silver, some jewelry. Even these poor people, oftentimes they have jewelry hidden somewhere in case there's a dire emergency. They can use it. But now, even the wealthiest people, everything's made out of plastic and fiberglass and all sorts of contaminated refined oil products. And it really has no value. It has no substance. So Srila Prabhupada is explaining that, if you have furniture made of plastic or wood, when it becomes old and broken, it is simply useless. But when you have furniture made of brass or silver or gold or jewels, even if it's completely broken and old, it still has the same value, even more value than when you first purchased it or acquired it. So this is actual civilization. That things are created of ingredients that do not lose their value. And the fact that we have a civilization where we just keep creating these cheap things that have no value after some time, it's creating a terrible ecological problem. What to do with all the waste? People eating on plastic plates. And then what do? You just eat, and then what do you... Plastic. What do you call it? It's not biodegradable. If you burn it, it pollutes the atmosphere and disturbs the ozone. Otherwise, you have to bury it and it just contaminates the earth. Otherwise, you just everything's in just big, huge garbage heaps, and everywhere in the world, nobody knows what to do with all the garbage. And it's not nice garbage, like banana peels and and skins from eggplants. This is nice garbage. The cows can eat and give you milk after they eat it. Or even if it goes into the earth, it fertilizes the ground. But we're creating all these unnatural ingredients, which when they grow old, they become useless. And after they become useless, we don't know what to do with it. It just contaminates the earth, contaminates the air, contaminates the water. And there's a huge problem of waste. It's one of the biggest problems in the world. What to do with all the waste that is being created by the unendurable products that human beings are creating. But in Vedic civilization, there was simply no waste because people were civilized. Whatever they made, it was made out of even poor people. Whatever they made, it was made out of valuable ingredients, and however old it was, it still had its same value. And if you don't have gold and silver, you make your house out of mud and cow dung. And then it's nice. When it starts falling apart, you just put some more mud on it. You don't have to worry about getting an extra job to renovate your house. It was simple living, high thinking. So in every way, shape, or form, the civilization that has been given to us by the great rishis and by God himself, this Vedic civilization, is superior materially, spiritually, on every level. And these westernized conceptions of civilization are simply ruining the earth internally and externally. And, of course, we are importing. Importing is one thing, but the problem is, in India, we are substituting our own heritage of such a superior culture for such an inferior culture. We're bringing in all sorts of plastics. We're bringing in all sorts of technology, which only creates ecological disasters. And worse than that, we're bringing in a whole way of life, way of looking at life, that is full of immorality, sinful activities. Srila Prabhupada, he had a different idea. His idea was to export the great value of the Vedic culture by teaching people how to live their lives properly, spiritually and materially, in the service of the Lord, which begins by chanting his holy names. Questions? Who is asking? Haribol, what are the true qualities of a Vaishnava? In this very volume of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila Dev explains, Tatikshava Karunaka Suhrada Sarvabhutanam Ajata Satrava Santa Sadhava Sadhu Bhushanam. I will The symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful, friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures. And all his characteristics are sublime. Mayananyena bhavena bhaktin kurvanti yedritham matkrite tyakta karmanas tyakta svajada bandhava. Such a sadhu engages in staunch devotional service to the Lord without deviation. For the sake of the Lord, he renounces all other connections, such as family relationships and friendly acquaintances within this world. This means renouncing those relationships, renouncing attachment to those relationships which are not conducive to the service of the Lord. Engaged constantly in chanting and hearing about me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the sadhus do not suffer from material miseries because they are always filled with thoughts of my pastimes and activities. O my mother, O virtuous lady, these are the qualities of great devotees who are free from all attachment. You must seek attachment to such holy men, for this counteracts the pernicious effects of material attachment. In the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced in the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begins. Thus, consciously engage in devotional service in the association of devotees, a person gains distaste for sense gratification, both in this world and in the next, by constantly thinking about the activities of the Lord. This process of Krishna consciousness is the easiest process of mystic power when one is actually situated on the path of devotional service. He is able to control his mind.
Haribo. This is what Devahuti Bhagavan has explained to his mother. But he begins this beautiful description with this verse, which is a wonderful verse. Everyone should listen very carefully.
Prasangam ajaram pasham atmanakava yogidhu se eva sadhu shukrito mokshadwaram apavritam. Every learned man knows very well that attachment for the material is the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul. But that same attachment, when applied to the self-realized devotees, opens the door of liberation. Is there any other questions? Knowingly? If we unknowingly and unwillingly, then we should sincerely serve the devotees and chant the holy names of Krishna. If it's knowing and willing, that is a different thing. Then we must apologize to that devotee. And we must really take shelter of the holy name. And we must resolve in our mind to never perform such offenses again. Jagayan Madhai offended everyone, devotees, non-devotees, everyone. But when they vowed to never perform such offenses again, and they took the dust from the feet of all the Vaishnavas with sincere hearts begging for forgiveness, and they chanted the holy name in a mood of service, they were resolved of all offenses. But if we do not know and we had no intention, then it is not a serious offense. If you just go on properly executing devotional service, Krishna will make everything nice. To be with all of you. I'm so great. Yes? It's too late now. What? By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam attentively, by applying the teachings to our life, by engaging in humble service under spiritual master's instruction, by being very friendly, kind to all devotees, through this process of developing a service attitude, our quality of chanting is pleasing to Krishna. And then we must chant in a very regulated, strict way. And we must endeavor, according to our capacity, to be attentive. So, tonight there will be a nice festival for the deities. Pleasure. If possible, please come. I thank you very much. Hare Krishna.